Lowe, I'm Kristen McDonald, and you're listening to Second Vision. If you've hit that midlife mark, and by the way, they say it's at age 40 when it happens, and you're not living your life's passion, then today's show is for you. Craig Nathanson is the author of Don't Just Retire and Die at Age 40, A New Approach to Your Life and Work After 40. And he is a motivational speaker, a college professor, a vocational counselor, and Craig holds so many degrees I couldn't possibly enumerate all of them. And he's here to help us create a second vision for our life and our career today. How are you, Craig?
Hey, perfect, Kristen. Doing what I love this morning.
Good. I love that. And I understand that you're near the wine country.
I am. We're about 45 minutes from San Francisco, and right here in the wine country of Northern California.
You know, it's funny because I'm in Southern California in Los Angeles, as you know, and the two are so vastly different.
Yes, it's like going to another country, I think, sometimes.
Isn't it? Yeah. I really felt that. Anyway, tell us a little bit about your fascinating background. You were in corporate America for many years, from what I understand.
Yeah, I mean, I was good at what I did. I was an executive for 25 years, and I was good at it, but I never really enjoyed it. And late in my 25-year career, I started realizing that why do most of my peers just don't like what they do? And that included many people that had, you know, all the material success. And that, to make a long story short, that sort of prompted me one day to give it all up.
And what were you doing in corporate America?
Well, you know, I was a director of sales, and I was in IT, and I was in human resources, and then ultimately 20 of us founded the first internet company back in the .com area, and we tried that, but it all was the same. It just wasn't fulfilling to me, you know.
So you came home each day, and you were paying the bills, and even though you had success, you weren't happy.
Well, absolutely. I had, you know, the multi-million dollar house and the fancy cars and, you know, all the trappings that anybody else would say, wow, this guy's made it. And yet inside, I felt quite the opposite.
Now, we had a nice talk the other day, and I understand you faced some personal crisis in your life as well. And this all led you to making a change. Can you share some of that with us?
Yes, I can. You know, during my PhD studies, I studied what happens to people, Christian, after 40 with regards to their work. And I never thought I would push the envelope and live my own research. But, you know, as soon as I left corporate America to follow my passion of writing and working with people over 40, you know, I had lots of things happen. My father sadly lost his purpose. He committed suicide.
Oh, my goodness.
Went through a very, terrible divorce and difficult time. I, you know, lost my house in bankruptcy and foreclosure. I had a son who was very ill. You know, that's just the top of the list. I had a cancer scare. I mean,
could it get any worse?
I don't know. But at the time, my work saved my life. And I realized then, and I tell you and all your listeners now, that when you live an authentic life, it can make you happy, but it can save your life as well.
Now, what did you do to recreate the wheel? You went inside, you looked at yourself, you took a stop and said, I'm not happy. You had all these losses. How did you deal with that first? Did you go to therapy? Those 10 things you just named on the list of terrible, tragic things to experience in life.
I think the good news is because of, you know, 12 years of being in a PhD program and studying what happens to people, I was sort of prepared for this. Of course, I never thought it would happen to me, but I think the good news is because I'd always spent a lot of time, which is what I tell people, to learn about me. I was pretty well prepared because I knew myself, and I thought, you know, I'm not going to go homeless and I'm not going to die. And so what could be worse, you know?
So you had a lot of insight.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, what is the difference between a vocation and a career?
Well, you know, a career is just a fancy job title with a label. You know, we're simply renting ourselves to others when we have a career. A career leads to retirement, and I think, Kristen, the only people that retire are people that just don't love what they do. And statistically, a large percentage of people die within 10 years after they retire. And so I just don't think that path is useful anymore for people.
No, I know. Well, you know, and there's so many different categories of people, too, that in terms of retirement, you know, let's look at some of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's the type who can never retire because they're too antsy and they just don't want to sit around and they really want to have some passion in their life. Then there's the type today that can never retire. I mean, people have lost their retirements. The economy's changed. You know, since you recreated the wheel, you know, and then we have a disabled sector of people who might be forced to retire at age 40 and don't want to, and maybe want to reinvent themselves. So let's look at some of these different areas?
Well, you know, what most of us find out before 40, we need to build the ego, we need to build ourselves, you know, a sense of self in the world, and that's important. And we find out that organizational life, which most of us work for at some point, is about, you know, productivity and revenue and efficiency. And yet, after 40, we decide internally, and we realize, although we may not admit it, that that's no longer important. What's more important is fulfillment and joy, and, you know, how do I make myself happy, coherence about my work. And so that's the challenge that we have to answer after 40, is we have to be a little humble and ask ourselves, you know, what more work must now emerge through us?
Well, I loved your quote, and that was, you know, to quote you, the world works is a little better when we do what we love,
yeah,
or
yeah.
Maybe I didn't quote it exactly, but
no,
I understood what you meant, especially because I've been in entertainment for many years, and I had to reinvent the wheel when the company closed and I had lost part of my sight, and even if I had wanted to do that job, I couldn't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I was faced in midlife to have to say, my God, what do I want to do now? And the interesting thing is I'm doing a circuitous route back to things that I loved in the beginning of my career. So I feel much happier, and I feel I'm on a path now with the radio and speaking that is much more me. So it is very interesting how things come to you in the universe when you're doing what you love. You attract things.
Yeah, and I mean, I wish, Kristen, that more people would make change for themselves before a crisis hits. But in my experience, it takes a crisis. It takes a layoff, a financial issue, an illness, a divorce, all of those things, any combination of those things, for people to finally realize, you know, maybe this is a defining moment. I need to finally do what I love.
Well, and you said you found a gift, which I have done myself, too, in helping others. And I think that's wonderful because, I mean, that's how you built your whole career with vocational counseling, correct?
Yes. I mean, the vision I have for myself is I'm like a lemonade stand on a hot summer day, and people that drink from my stand will come away with the thirst quenched.
I love that. So you spend much of your time then counseling adults in midlife on how to recreate the wheel.
Yeah, absolutely. Both through my speaking and through my coaching, yes.
Now, what was the prior book to the one that I just mentioned?
The book in 2003.
The 10 P's or something?
Yeah, P is for perfect, your perfect vocational day, which was a 10-step model, which my new book also covers in more depth, to help people sort of, you know, people like 10 steps, I found. So I took all of my research and put it into 10 simple steps, you know, sort of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, except in reverse for those over 40.
Now, what do you do with someone who really is struggling financially midlife? They have obligations, a house, they have kids in college, maybe they've lost part of this retirement. I mean, God, you turn on the news today and it's layoff after layoff, General Motors. I mean, the Madoff crisis is just one thing after the other. We have to be realistic too, you know?
Well, I don't like that word realistic because I think that I prefer to say, look, it takes different. Everybody has a unique situation. Money is a very unique situation for each person. People, Christian, fall into, you know, one of four money categories. You know, plenty of money and plenty of time. You know, you could afford to try some things. Lots of money, no time. We're older, we're sick. Different strategies are needed there. Many of us fall into over 40 into the third category. Not much money, not much time. So we have 6 months of money in the bank, 6 months of, expenses
right.
in the bank, and then most of us right now are falling into the last category. You know, no money, no time. If we lose our job, we need an income next month. And so, you know, it takes different strategies. If you're a software engineer and you'd rather work with animals, then you become and you're living paycheck to paycheck, you become a software engineer, same pay scale, in the animal industry. You know, you make little steps. So there's a plan for everyone, but it takes some new creative thinking, I think.
It does. I think it also takes embracing the situation, getting out of denial. That's something I speak on quite a bit. Because once you can really accept your situation and look at it clearly, you're able to see it very differently. You know, when you stop and take a moment and look at it very differently. Sometimes we have this vision of the way we think something's going to turn out, and it doesn't always turn out that way.
Well, and a lot of us, Christian, we ask for approval to make sure it's okay from somebody else before we do what we really love. And I suggest for people after 40, you know, to sort of ignore everyone and go inside.
Yeah. Well, and then you have this group of people who just are very happy retiring. You know, that's the way I was raised, thinking, you know, you're going to retire at 65 and hopefully have a little boat or something in a summer house, and you'll get to read and do some exercise and maybe travel someplace, you know, enjoy your life. You know, I mean, what about that group of people? Do you suggest that they always have a passion on the side, or?
I think what we do determines who we are, and the best way to do that is through one's work. Now, you know, that could be volunteer. Notice I'm not equating how much money.
So you believe you are what you do?
You are what you do, and what you do typically is through your activities during the day, which I define as work in some way. And so even if you're, quote, retired and you have plenty of money, you can't sit on the golf course all day and talk about the past. You have to do something. So whatever that something is, in my research, I found that the more people can package that something into a gift, into a product, into a service that they can give away or sell to someone else, it's going to extend their life because it's going to give them meaning and fulfillment about, hey, this is how I'm making a difference in the world. Here's my contribution to the world.
But what about somebody who's at 67 and they're tired and they have stress or they've had ill health, or maybe they have good health, but they've made enough money and they've been satisfied in their career and they just really do want to go on the golf course? Well, you think there's something wrong there? Or
No, of course not.
I mean, I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Here's what I'll say. For the person who has it all and enjoys their golf game every day, that's fine. I mean, the bottom line is most people do not feel like they're living an authentic life. You know, that's been my research. And what's an authentic life? It's doing activities which make this feel real to you. That make, you know, this is part of who I am. It's fulfilling. It's joyful. It makes sense to me. And if playing golf for the rest of your life is works and you're happy, that's great. I mean, but my research has shown, Kristen, that actually that doesn't last as long as one might think, because there's only so many golf games you could play before you come home and you say, what else is there? So I still maintain my position that one should work until they stop breathing. It's something that they're really passionate about. So maybe this person should work volunteer at the golf course, for example.
Right. Well, and there are many people who haven't been that fortunate who have worked just to live. The cab driver who has two kids and is working two jobs. And I mean, these are a lot of the people you don't meet on a day-to-day basis. But if you start talking to them, store owners and there's a whole gamut of people. They're not all the corporate executives who have risen to the top. And many of those people aren't always satisfied either. They're not always fulfilled. What about, some of our listeners are have a greater challenge. They're visually impaired and blind, and many have been forced to go on disability. What kind of advice would you give someone like that when they've had to make a job change or go on Social Security? Many of these people are scared to go back into the workforce because they're afraid that they can't be trained for a job or they can't actually do the job that they could before.
Yeah, I still think it takes a different approach. I think it's the same. Obviously, the more challenges we have, the more difficult it is. But I think starting with the same question, which is, what is the purpose of my life? Now, most people never answer that question, but it's the one question, especially in midlife, that we have to ask ourselves. Where do I want to make a contribution in the world? What bothers me about the world? What bothers me about my neighborhood? Where do I want to make a contribution? How can I align my abilities and my interest in a way that helps me make a difference in the areas that I feel most strongly about? And I think that's an important set of questions to answer, whether I have, challenges or not. I think it's the same for all of us, and I would start with that.
And that's the difference, like you said, between a job and a career.
Yeah.
And why do you say people should quit before they get fired, or what was your saying that?
Well, I mean,
before the job fires them?
Yeah, I suggest people do, in fact, quit before it's too late, especially after 40. Because what happens is we become trapped. I had a friend who was a taxi cab driver, and he wanted to be a sculptor. And at night, he would try to sculpt, but he was always too tired. And then after many years, he said, "Craig, guess what?" I said, "What?" He says, "I found that I became embroiled in the job of being a taxi cab driver, and I was too tired to sculpt. And then one day, I woke up and realized I'm a taxi cab driver." So the more you do what you don't want, you will become and become trapped, as B.F. Skinner used to prove in his scientific experiments in the 60s, I think, that we become trapped, and so we have to produce our own lever to get out of the cage.
Right. Now, you also say that there's a difference, there's a conflict in corporate America between organizations and personal growth. Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, organizations by its nature, especially public companies, you know, by law, I mean, it's by law, they have to look at their shareholders as the number one entity to serve. And just that causes a dichotomy between what people want, especially people after 40. You know, they want fulfillment and joy and meaning in their work and coherence. And the organization doesn't care about that. The organization, by charter, really only has to care and should care about the bottom line, about productivity, revenue, efficiency.
Yes, I know this from being in corporate America. It kind of stifles creativity at times.
Yeah, I mean, no one from HR is going to run up to you on Monday and say, hey, Christian, I've been thinking about you all weekend. Are you finding joy in your work? I'm still waiting for the first HR benefits package to include an authentic life.
Right.
So,
no, you're absolutely on target there. Now, let's get back to the book that you wrote before this one with the P's. You were saying that, and I think I digressed. What are the 10 P's?
Well, we start with, you know, purpose, and then prize, which is what's most important to you. And then we look at perspective, which is how you feel about yourself. And then you move into possibilities, which is looking at, you know, new possibilities for your life and your work. And that follows, you know, place. You know, what's your place or role in the world? And, of course, there's detailed exercises I like to lead people to think about these things deeply. And then it's time to think about position or attitude. What's your attitude or position about your work? And that's followed by passion, which is followed by the core of my work, which is perfect vocational day. You know, if you could just define the pattern of a day you'd like to live for the rest of your life that would leave you breathless, what would that day be like? You know, when would you get up? Where would you go? Who would you be with? And that leads to present, you know, the ninth P. The reason, Christian, most people don't live an authentic life is due to relationship. So you got to have people around you who support your journey. Financial, you have to have a good sense of your financial needs and wants, and there's a difference between need and want. And emotional, you know, you got to, am I good enough? Can I give myself permission? Can I change beliefs which are no longer useful? And the tenth P is about giving yourself permission to say, look, here's a defining moment in my life, and as a result of this, I'm not going to put up with a life like this anymore, and I'm going to pursue an authentic life for myself. And so through each of the 10 P's is really a representation of, you know, all of my doctoral research on what happens to people, you know, after 40 with regards to their work.
You know, it's also really about goal setting and putting it down on paper, isn't it? Because you really can't, I've experienced that, you really can't see it unless you get it down on paper and kind of manifest it to the universe, because it gives it structure, it gives it meaning.
Yeah, I mean, I tell people, in first, you know, six steps to reach any goal. First, you got to envision it, and like you said, you have to write it down, and then you have to talk to somebody, and then you got to take small steps.
Oh, the coaching is so important. I mean, that's, of course, about everything that you do, you know. Being accountable to someone is very, very important.
Yes.
It's hard to do it on our own often. So tell us some of the wonderful examples of people that you've worked with.
You know, I think of Roberta Caruso, a 73-year-old woman who was in corporate America for 20-plus years doing training, clerical kinds of things, just sort of feeling humiliated in her job. And yet she had a Ph.D. in art. And she was a writer, and she was very passionate about art, but she felt beaten down by the organization. And, you know, today Roberta is the art coach. She helps many very famous artists all over the world place their art in big museums. And she's a coach, and she's living her passion. And she did this, and she's in my book, and she did this as a result of finally deciding, you know, I'm just not going to put up with this anymore. And, you know, Roberta is one of many examples. Another gentleman comes to mind on another scale, Craig Barton in Arizona. Craig went through a very sad divorce, and all of a sudden he found himself alone, without money, feeling suicidal. And it was through his work on starting to believe in himself again that he was able to pick himself back up and realize that his passion was houses. And today Craig, in this market, you know, buys and sells houses and is very successful and has found a new venture for himself. So, and there's many more stories like that of wonderful people I've worked with who went through more or less the same crisis happened, a defining moment happened, and they said, that's it. You know, I have to depend on myself. I have to be selfish and figure out what I'm going to do. I can't depend on anyone to help me. And as a result, you know, they, like you, have become role models for others.
It's the aha moment.
Yes.
That, you know, that we all hopefully get to that point where we have the aha moment. Mm-hmm. The God shot, and when we just kind of wake up and say, well, wait a minute, maybe if this hasn't worked, maybe I can try this,
mm-hmm.
you know? But I want to hear a little bit more, too, about, I mean, you made it sound so easy, your transition from corporate America to you know, doing what you do now and writing all these wonderful books and everything. Didn't you struggle? I mean, you told mm-hmm. me there was a day where you had 5 cents in the bank, and that yeah. was one of your happiest times.
Well, you know, I tell people now, if you're going to go into business for yourself, you should expect to make 50% less in the first 4 years. You know, I didn't know that. And as an early entrepreneur, some weeks I had thousands and some weeks I had nothing. And I can remember one day when at the time I was living with my 3 kids in a 400-square-foot apartment with no furniture, and that particular day I had $5, and we needed to eat. And I had a piece of fish at home, and I thought, well, maybe we need something to go with it. We went to a farmer's market, and I sadly realized that the only thing I could buy that day was a few vegetables.
Oh, boy.
And we came home, and we cooked that meal, and it was a great lesson for us. And, you know, I think that was the best food, the best meal I ever had. And the reason was that $5 came from a CD I had sold to somebody earlier in the day. And one thing you realize when you start to sell your life's work in terms of products, your appreciation of money, you know, increases. And so that's why it felt so good. I can remember my corporate days, you know, making lots and lots of money, and it just sort of came and went, and, you know, I didn't appreciate anything.
Well, I think that's what's happened, and we could have a whole other show on this. The economic climate has made us all appreciate just simple things in life now.
Yes.
Not to take anything for granted. It's so fragile, our economy. You know, but what would you tell people now going out there to become a new entrepreneur or change careers? I mean, it has changed in the past year or two. Would you just tell them just be just as positive? The work is there. And
well, I think this is the best time. You know, I think with all due respect to people that have lost money, I think this is the best time to put the issue of money aside for a moment and really think deeply about what are your gifts, what is the alignment of your abilities and interests, what are you passionate about, you know, how do you turn that into a product or a service? You know, people don't realize that 90% of the companies in the U.S. have less than 500 people. You know, so this is a country of small business, and I think this is a perfect time. And I think the new economic climate pushes us to start to look at, you know, what can we sell in terms of product or services, either by ourselves or through other people, and around our passion. So it's a perfect time, I think.
You know, it's interesting. I heard a speaker recently. I was at a seminar, and he said, make a list of the ten things that you need, that something, a gadget or something that could be created to, you know, to fit something that you need. And he said, 9 times out of 10, I've worked with people like this, and when they develop a product around that, they're millionaires. So it's interesting. My dad used to say that. Say, you know, if you just sell somebody something somebody needs, like these little parts for cars or something. His friend was very well off, and it was always in demand. It's interesting.
Well, you know, I bought something at Staples this morning. I forgot what it was, and it came in one of those plastic things that you literally end up in the emergency room by the time you cut this package, you know, the plastic, to get it open.
Right.
And I thought to myself, as you were saying, well, if someone just invented a $3 gadget to go snip and open this package, I would buy this thing.
Oh, but, definitely.
So there you go.
That's exactly. That's one of them. So, and you think the careers are overrated?
Careers.
What you say in the book.
Careers are not only overrated, they're no longer useful. The concept of a career is no longer a useful idea. For people over 40. Notice I say for people over 40.
Well, you've just done a wonderful job yourself, and I want to lead people to your website, too. What is your website, so our listeners know?
Yes, my online community, which I've had for 8 years, is thevocationalcoach.com. That's thevocationalcoach.com, thevocationalcoach.com.
Great. That's Craig Nathanson. And you have another book coming down the pike, I understand.
You know, I want to contribute back to the world of business. So I have a book out this summer called Management, The New Manager, new techniques for new times. And so it's my attempt to sort of put some humanistic management back in the economy. I think one of the reasons the economy is in bad shape is because we continue to have poor management. Therefore, we need better education.
Now, that's interesting. And so do you talk a lot about, is that for corporations or individuals?
Well, it's written for corporations, but it's also written in a way that will help people lead themselves, because you have to learn how to lead yourself before you can lead others.
Oh, absolutely. And most of us aren't taught how to do that.
No, and that's the reason for the book.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we're winding down on time, but this has been so wonderfully inspiring and informative. And I want to tell people also that you're available for coaching, teleseminars. You do webinars, right?
I do all of those.
Speaking, yes. You do all of it. And it's all, and CDs. Tell us about your CD collection before we close.
I have 25 CDs, which I've made with a wonderful guest over the last 7 years. They're all available on my site. And there's different topics. And they were designed to help people really get ideas from discovering your passion to figuring out your purpose to really figuring out how to strengthen your beliefs. And they're all available on my site, as well as all my other services.
Well, and that's wonderful, too, for some of our listeners who are interested in hearing the CDs, because I understand your books aren't on audio yet.
Not yet, but they will be.
Yeah. I'll help you do that, Craig.
All right.
I have to go line by line.
All right. You got it. You got a deal. Don't Just Retire and Die. We'll be on audio in a couple months. We've made that commitment now.
But absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you've been a delightful guest, and I want to thank everyone for listening. My guest today is Craig Nathanson, and he's the author of Don't Just Retire and Die, a guide to your life's passion at 40, a new approach to your life and work at age 40. And I hope that you're taking all of this into account, because it's never too late. And 40 is young, and 50 is young, and you can just live your life with a new vision if you just try. So thank you, Craig. You have a blessed day. I look forward to working together in the future and talking again.
You too, Kristen. And to all of the listeners out there, I'm cheering for you every step of the way.
Oh.
Have a passionate day.
Thank you. You too.
Take care.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Second Vision. I'm Kristen McDonald.